Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Nuclear power is increasing the people's cancer rate and threatening to destroy the entire planet. Well, this is America, where business is business, so these problems don't really matter. Okay, let's try a new argument. Nuclear doesn't make any business sense either. So, can we pull the plug now? Stay tuned for more. It's been a rough winter all over. California's ongoing drought was made even worse by the state's lack of snow this winter. California depends on snowmelt to replenish its reservoirs. Well, up here, we think we know where California's snow went. Half of it landed on the city of Boston. Boston got 109 inches of snow this winter. The other half of California's missing snow was spread over the rest of New England. That's in addition to our normal winter snow. We got all of that, too. And it stayed really cold all winter, so the snow didn't melt till April. Anyway, here in darkest Connecticut, it's been a long winter, and good riddance at last. Speaking of good riddance, there was one bright spot out here this winter. The creaky, old, accident-prone nuclear power plant Vermont Yankee was finally shut down at the end of December. Vermont Yankee is a bit north of here in central Connecticut. It's in southern Vermont. But it's right on the Connecticut River. Every radioactive discharge from there floats downstream and reaches Hartford, Connecticut a few days later. At least now they're not generating new radioactive waste. But all the waste Vermont Yankee does have will just be stored there because there's no safe place to put the stuff anywhere else. Connecticut has its own shutdown nuclear reactors. The former Connecticut Yankee plant in Haddam Neck, and there's one shutdown reactor at the Millstone plant in Waterford. Millstone still has two other reactors bubbling away, and no place to put its radioactive waste either. According to Wikipedia, Millstone is the largest electric generating plant in New England. But to return to the recently deceased Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. For decades, community activists have been trying to get the plant shut down. They failed. For the past several years, the Vermont State Legislature had been trying to close the plant down. They failed. So who closed down Vermont Yankee? The corporation that owns it, Entergy Corp. Why? Not because it's a risk to public health, but because it's not economical. Vermont Yankee cannot produce electricity competitively compared to natural gas-fired plants, or coal, or solar, or wind. Even with the taxpayers shouldering much of the huge construction cost, not to mention the huge cleanup costs, nuclear still costs too much per kilowatt hour to compete with electricity produced by other means. Anyway, there were 500 public safety and environmental reasons to shut down Vermont Yankee, and none of them mattered in the least, apparently. But Vermont Yankee was shut down because it was not contributing enough to corporate profits. Anyway, on December 29, 2014, Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Station was officially closed. So the winter wasn't a total bummer. I'm intrigued that it was the capitalist commercial marketplace itself that did Vermont Yankee in. And, poking around, I found evidence that nuclear power has never, ever been economically viable. And it's getting even less and less viable day by day. We'll hear from a couple of experts who say versions of this. We'll hear from economist and business guru Jeremy Rifkin, and then former power executive David Freeman. First, Jeremy Rifkin. He spoke at an international investment conference in 2013. One investor asked, "Do widespread concerns about global warming make nuclear power a more attractive investment opportunity?" Rifkin says no, for five different reasons. He then actually gives six different reasons. And one of the reasons was a completely new idea to me. Here it is. There's not enough usable water in the world to make nuclear a major source of the world's electric power. But even if there were enough water, the answer is still no. Nuclear power does not make sense from an economic perspective. Take a listen to this.
I'm from Kazina Capital Management, part of Sovereign Wealth Fund of Kazakhstan. What would be your view on nuclear energy, given that it's a non-carbon and there are new technologies that can basically be very, very safe, I mean, to some extent, and can be quite efficient in terms of, getting energy from uranium?
I don't spend much time on nuclear technology unless someone asks me about it, because frankly, I think from a business perspective, it's over. I think it's over, and let me explain why. There may be a lot of ideological issues, but from a business perspective, here's the situation. Nuclear power was pretty well dead in the water in the 1980s after Three Mile Island and Chernobyl. It had a comeback. The comeback was the industry said, we are part of the solution for climate change because we don't emit CO2 with nuclear. It's polluting, but there's no CO2. Here's the issue, though. All of our scientific projections are interesting on this. Nuclear power right now is 6% of the energy of the world. There are only 400 nuclear power plants. They rely on 6% of the energy of the world. And these are old nuclear power plants. But our scientists tell us to have a minimum impact on climate change, which is the whole rationale for bringing this technology back. Nuclear would have to be 20% of the energy mix to have the minimum impact on climate change, not 6% of the mix. That means we'd have to replace the existing 400 nuclear plants and build 1,600 additional plants. Three nuclear plants have to be built every 30 days for 40 years to get to 20%. And by that time, climate change will have run its course for us. So I think from a business point of view, I just don't see that investment. I'd be surprised if we replace 100 of the 400 existing plants, which would take us down to 1% or 2% of the energy. Number two, we still don't know how to recycle the nuclear waste, and we're 70 years in. Now, we have good engineers in the U.S. We spent 18 years and $8 billion building an underground vault in Yucca Mountain to store the waste for 10,000 years. We can't use it. We can't even store them. It's already no good because there are cracks in the mountain. But any geologist could have told them, we live on tectonic plates. You can't keep underground vaults secure. Number three, we run into uranium deficits, according to the International Atomic Energy Commission, you may know this, between 2025 and 2035, with just the existing 400 plants. So that means the price goes up. Number four, we could do what the French generation of new plants are doing, and recycle the uranium to plutonium. But then we have plutonium all over the world in an age of uncertainty and terrorism. And then finally, and this is the big one that people don't realize, we don't have the water. Over 40% of all the fresh water consumed in France each year goes to cooling the nuclear reactors. It's almost 50% now. When it comes back, it's heated and it's dehydrating our agricultural ecosystems and it's threatening our agriculture. So we don't have the water, and this is true all over the world. We have saltwater nuclear plants, but then you have to put them on coastal regions and you risk a Fukushima because of tsunamis and ocean currents. And I would say the last thing on this is that nuclear power is centralized power. We'll talk about this tonight, like fossil fuels. It doesn't fit a new generation that's moving with the kind of technologies that are distributed, collaborative, and laterally scaled. It's an old technology. So it's no accident Siemens is out, Germany is out, Italy is out, Japan is now out. And I think with President Hollande's election, I met with him in the spring, they're moving toward a third industrial revolution model in France. I think I'd be surprised if nuclear has much of a life left. I don't think it's a good business deal.
I agree with you.
That was economist, management consultant, and business guru Jeremy Rifkin. Okay, nuclear power does not make economic sense. And modern history is full of doable technology that was scrapped because it didn't make economic sense. For example, supersonic jet passenger planes, such as the Concorde, remember that? Scrapped, and good riddance. The economic costs of building and running the things made no economic sense. So, why is the nuclear industry still pushing hard to continue this ultra-expensive, zombie, and destructive power technology? Well, for one, they've got a bit of money badly invested in it. For two, the energy corporations don't care if it's competitive. The whole industry depends on massive government subsidies paid for by us, the taxpayers. Take away the government subsidies, and the executives would shut down this money-losing enterprise as rapidly as possible. And why is the government subsidizing this economically non-viable doomsday technology? Many reasons. One of them is just the power of most big business to get their profits subsidized by the taxpayers. The oil industry is the master of this game. So is big agriculture, and let's not even mention, quote, defense, unquote. But nuclear has won additional advantage over these other guys. Since the beginning, civilian nuclear power has been a fig leaf for the government's real interest. Their real interest is in developing and building bigger and bigger nuclear weapons. And I think that's still the case. After World War II, the people were afraid and worried about all things nuclear, and rightly so. One response was a massive propaganda campaign to make people feel good about messing around with the atomic structure of matter. President Eisenhower launched the famous Atoms for Peace program. Our friend, the atom, was an industry catchphrase. But there's very little useful you can accomplish with atomic radiation. Maybe burn away some cancer cells sometimes. That and boil water. That's what nuclear electric plants do. Boil water. Just like a steam locomotive. The steam from the boiling water spins a turbine. The turbine turns a generator and makes electricity. A federal authority was established, the Atomic Energy Commission, or AEC. It was given two tasks: regulate the civilian nuclear industry and promote the civilian nuclear industry. Would anybody be surprised if I said the AEC did a lot of promoting and very little regulating? David Freeman will give some details here. He's an expert in the field and a highly experienced power administrator. He was head of the Tennessee Valley Authority, the TVA, under President Jimmy Carter. Like Jeremy Rifkin, Freeman explains why nuclear power never made any economic sense. And he explains how the whole project is just a fig leaf for nuclear bomb making. He spoke at a conference in New York in 2013. Here is David Freeman.
We were deluged with the most vivid descriptions of how this awesome power, this almost godlike power, would be turned to the use of the benefit of mankind. I think it's useful to examine some of the words that were said. For example, Robert Hutchins, who was the chancellor of the University of Chicago, where a lot of the Manhattan Project research was done, said the following: from atomic energy, heat will be so plentiful that it will even be used to melt snow as it falls. A very few individuals working a few hours a day at very easy tasks in the general atomic power plants will provide all the heat, light, and power required by the community And those utilities will be so cheap in their costs, they'll hardly be made to matter at all. The science writer, Scripps Howard, in 45 said, all transportation forms will be freed at once from the limits now put upon them by the weight of present fuels. They talked about filling the gasoline tank of your automobile rather than two times a week, once a year with a pellet of atomic energy the size of a vitamin pill. The day will be gone when nations will fight for oil. Large pellets will be used to turn the wheels of industry, and when they do, they will turn the era of atomic energy into the age of plenty. And it went on and on and on, and people believed it. It was a euphoric era. Truth of the matter, at the same time, David Lilienthal, the head of the AEC, had to report to Harry Truman that about the time the Russians put off their bomb, that we had no stockpile. So if you read all through David Lilienthal's journals when he was head of the AEC, there was never any discussion of civilian nuclear power. They were in the arms race, and they were talking about the hydrogen bomb, and it was all about armaments, and all this talk about this idyllic world was just talk. And the very bright scientists that built the bomb, they went back to their secure positions in universities mostly, and they didn't get down and dirty with things like pipes and pumps and things like that that had to be developed for a reactor. So we went through this euphoric period that lasted through the 40s and into the 50s. Then we got into an era where the research wasn't producing anything. And frankly, the AEC people knew that they weren't anywhere near a civilian reactor, but they kept making all these grandiose promises in order to get money from the Congress to continue their weapons program, to be quite frank with you about it. And then events started happening. The Congress passed, the Price-Anderson Act in 1957, I think it was, which really was the beginning of the civilian nuclear power program. And they had some research reactors that didn't work out very well. No one paid much attention. But the big breakthrough was in 63, I think it was, when General Electric made a bid for the Oyster Creek nuclear power plant, and they bid at a price just under the price of coal. And, of course, the AEC and all these people hail this as the beginning of the commercialization of nuclear power. Well, it was a loss leader bid, if there ever was one. The GE had no idea what that nuclear power plant was going to cost. All they decided as a corporation, it was time to start selling them. They had a turnkey deal at a price that made it competitive. But that price was way under what turned out to be the cost, and it ushered in the era of the cost overrun. And so these plants were built or sold at a price that looked like it was competitive with coal. But let's just understand this. There has never been a nuclear power plant built that was cost competitive in this country or anywhere else. It just had never happened. This is a technology whose middle name is cost overrun. And its last name and first name, too, if you want to be really honest about it. And so all of a sudden, what looked like a dormant option that had just gotten a lot of lip service began to be quite the rage. The Peabody Coal Company came to our law firm and said that they were so afraid of nuclear power taking over the future, they didn't think the coal resources in the West would ever be developed, and they wanted to create public power agencies with low interest money that could make the coal cheaper so they might have a chance of competing. Glenn Seaborg said, he didn't say it was probable, he said it was a certainty that nuclear power was going to be the wave of the future. And most people believed him. I personally found out how bad it was when I took over the Tennessee Valley Authority under Jimmy Carter in 76. I had found that TVA had stopped doing any maintenance work on its coal plants. For years, they were going all nuclear. They had an armada, I would call it, of about 12 nuclear reactors that they had built, and they were just writing off their coal plants. We put $1 billion into putting scrubbers and pollution control equipment on those coal plants. Then if we hadn't, TVA would have blacked out, because there were times in the future when all of their nukes were down. But anyhow, the mindset in those years was that this was the wave of the future. But mind you, that there never was a single one of these nuclear power plants whose ultimate cost was anywhere near competitive with other sources of power. And the other thing to remember is that the old AEC had the dual role of being, of promoting nuclear power. It's in the statute, as well as regulating it. And you know what took first place. It was the promotion. In fact, they suppressed all sorts of documents from their staff raising safety questions. So the issue of safety about nuclear power was not in the public domain as we went through this euphoric era in the 60s of just about everybody and their uncle ordering a nuclear power plant. At the same time, Glenn Seaborg, the head of the AEC, had gone to 60 different nations in the 50s. Remember the most famous speech of Dwight David Eisenhower as president was the Atoms for Peace speech he gave to the UN on December 8th, I think it was, 1953. And then as a result of that, we peddled the idea of the peaceful atom all over the world. And Seaborg was the main salesman. And I remember when the first time I went to Israel, and I asked them why, in the name of heaven, they were considering building an atomic power plant in the state of Israel. It would just be a Trojan horse. And I told them, they said, well, Ben-Gurion told us that if you didn't have atomic energy, you weren't a modern nation. And that was really the mindset that we created. It was sold. It was made in America. It was sold by America all over the world. Now we face a new dilemma. Having sold the world on what supposedly was the peaceful atom, we find there ain't no such thing. That the road to the bomb is the nuclear power plant. And here we are in a confrontation with Iran and North Korea, who are just really implementing the program that America sold to the world. And how, in the name of common sense, can we expect the nations of the world to support us in trying to stop these countries from building bombs, when we ourselves are promoting nuclear power? It is the height of hypocrisy, and it's hypocrisy that I think we don't even have a mirror in which we see, because arrogance seems to have wiped out any mirror on our part.
David Freeman with a brief I Was There history lesson. He says that nuclear electric power was always just a cover for nuclear weapons production. He also says that nuclear electric power has never, ever made economic sense. Not in the 1960s, definitely not now. And as we heard, economist and business analyst Jeremy Rifkin says the same. It looks to me like the future belongs to solar, with support from wind and natural gas. The economists are saying that solar and wind are competitive now, and their cost is likely to keep going down as the technology further matures. Near the end of his talk, David Freeman, too, states that right now, solar energy is competitively priced with energy from coal and natural gas. So don't let the nuclear industry tell you that our choice is between CO2-polluting hydrocarbons and non-CO2 polluting nuclear.
We need to form a very, very strong 100% renewable movement in this country and get together and let people know that we don't have to choose between carbon and plutonium. We can damn well get rid of both.
And let me utter a word that I haven't heard used at all today. Conservation. Energy efficiency. Okay, that's three words, but what the heck. I have condensed and edited David Freeman's talk. Thanks to TUCradio.org for the original audio recording. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust. Illegitimate non-carborundum. Question authority. Make love, not war. And please come back again next week. Ciao.